Good morning. Let's begin. I hate to bring this meaningful conversation to an end, but you'll do it offline. In any event, so we left off. You know what? I typed in the wrong. Okay. Today's daf is Maseches Tanis daf Chaf Aleph. So the Gemara brings up, we actually ended off in the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis. So the Gemara said the following. Remember again, the Gemara was a beautiful Gemara where Rava said to Raphram Bar Papa to tell him some of the redeeming factors of Rav Huna. And the Gemara was telling, Raphram Bar Papa was telling over about some of the beautiful attributes of Rav Huna. And we left off with the fact that Rav Huna, whenever he would sit down to have a meal, he would always make a declaration. He would say, Koman ditzarech leisev aleichol. Whoever needs anything to eat, whoever needs anything, come and join me. So we left off Amar Rava, last line, Amar Rava kulu matzina makayma. I could do all of the things that Rav Huna did, lebar meha, with the exception of this last one. Meaning, when we saw many things about Rav Huna, he would inspect the walls of the city. If he had medicine, he would share it with others. He would hang water outside of his home so people should have access to it. So Rav said, the truth is, I could emulate Rav Huna in all of those things. He's lav davka, he's saying that I'm doing it, but I could technically emulate Rav Huna in all of those ways, except for this last thing of opening up my home to go ahead and house anyone and everyone who needs to eat. Why? He says, the top of Chaf Aleph, Mishum d'nefishe b'nei chayla d'mechuza. Because, again, literally, b'nei chayla, now b'nei chayla literally normally means soldiers. In this case, it means the troops of mechuza are too great. Rashi says, d'ika aniye tfei, the kamechli karna. See, I wouldn't be able to do that in mechuza, because in mechuza, there are so many people that come to eat. So many people that are in need, that lemais, if I were to open up my home and put out this invitation, I would have nothing left in my home. So the Gemara says the following, Ilfur Rabbi Yochanan, the Bible says, so a beautiful, beautiful Gemara. Say, Ilfur Rabbi Yochanan, havagar si ba'araisa. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were peers, and they were learning together in the Beis Medrash. Dechika luhu milsa tuva. Things became very desperate for them. Their financial situation became exceptionally dire. Omri, nekum v'nezel v'ne'evad iska, v'nekayim b'nafsh. So, let's read it like this. Omri, they said, nekum v'nezel v'ne'evad iska, let's get up, and let's go into business. So let's go into business together. Dov, did I take your chair? Oh, you know what? That's, can you take that chair? Yeah, I don't want to take someone else's chair. Thank you, Menachem. I'm sorry, thank you. So they said, let's go ahead and let's go into business. V'nekayim b'nafshein, and let's establish through in ourselves, Efes, ki lo yihyeh b'cha evyon. Now we'll say, this is actually very interesting. The pasuk that he's quoting over here, the Torah says, Efes, ki lo yihyeh b'cha evyon. Literally, Efes in this context means, but there will be no poor among you, because the rest of the pasuk ends off, ki barich yivarecha Hashem, ba'aretz asher Hashem lekecha noseh lecha nachal rishta. So the pasuk literally says, speaking about the blessing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will confer upon the Jewish people, and God says, there will not be an evyon, there will not be anyone poor among you. So interestingly enough, Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan had a different interpretation of this pasuk. So if they look at Rashi, ki lo yihyeh b'cha evyon, b'cha b'atzmecha. So they understood that the pasuk is actually a directive to not live in an impoverished state. So Efes, Chodesh Baruch says, but lo yet becha evyon. In the becha, in you should not be destitute. Meaning that if you have the opportunity, some way, somehow, to shape your circumstances, you should absolutely do so. And you should not allow yourself to be in a destitute state. So they figured, here we are, we're learning in the Beis Medrash, we're poor. If we could somehow go into business and alleviate this poverty, then we should do so. Okay. Ozlu, they went. They went up to find business. Ozlu, Osve Tuse Guda Ri'ia. So say they went ahead and they sat down underneath a rickety wall. Havu kakarchi rifta. They were about to, literally, karchi rifta means break bread. They were about to eat. Now, we'll say, the reason why this story is mentioned is because of the rickety wall-ish that we were speaking about. So they sat down by a rickety wall. They're going to eat lunch. Asu tre malochi hasharis. So two malochim came along. Shamei Rabbi Yochanan da Amar Chaim Lechaver. Rabbi Yochanan overheard one malach say to his friend, Nishte alayu haiguda v'naktalinhu. Let's push down the wall on top of them. Let's push down the wall on top of Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan. Ari, I'm sorry, am I crowding over here? Okay, so they said, let's push down the wall and kill them. Why? Shemanichin chayi olam va'oskin v'chayi sha. It was a very profound statement. Why? Because they have forsaken eternal life, Rashi says, Torah, and they have engaged in chayi sha. They have engaged in olam hazeh, zeschora. They have decided to go into business. Now, Rabbos, I understand that Lamaisa, the Gemara here is not making a statement that it's better just to learn and not to work, because the Gemara clearly elsewhere indicates Kol Torah Shinma Malacha Sofa Betela, the need to go ahead and have a means of support. What the Gemara is saying over here is that Lamaisa, as we'll see, these were great men. These were great men. These were men who were capable of becoming true leaders of Klal Yisrael, whose place really was. There are certain individuals whose place is forever in the Beis Medrash. There are many. Most of Klal Yisrael's place is not in the Beis Medrash forever. Beis Medrash for some time, maybe like from 5:45 to 6:45, right? And then a person also has to find the means of Parnosa. So what the Gemara is saying is the Malachim said Ilfa Rabbi Yochanan, they Klal Yisrael needs them to be in the Beis Medrash, and they left. And therefore, to a certain degree, they've abdicated their very reason for living, and therefore the Malachim are ready to push down the wall on them. Amar le'idach, so listen to this, so the other Malach responded, Shafkinu, leave them alone. Di'i bless you, di'ika behu chad, di'kaimi le'shaita. Because there is one of them for whom the hour is important. Look at Rashi, kaimi le'shaita. Asid lehiskadl ve'in zman alamos. So also, kaimel shaita means his hour is at hand. That's the right way to say it. His hour is at hand. There's one of them who's about to recognize or realize incredible greatness. Rabbi Yochanan shama, Ilfa lo shama. Now we'll say only Rabbi Yochanan heard this conversation. Ilfa did not hear the conversation. Amrli Rabbi Yochanan le'Ilfa. So that's the Gemara just making a statement. So Rabbi Yochanan said to Ilfa, tell me, shama mar midi. Did you just hear anything? Amrli lo. Ilfa said, no, I didn't hear anything. Amar, Rabbi Yochanan said to himself, Midishamoi ana, since I heard, the Ilfa lo shama, and Ilfa did not hear, Shmamina lididi kaima li shaita. So Ilfa said, the fact that I heard, and Ilfa did not hear, indicates that what? That when the Malach was saying that the hour is at hand for one of these individuals, he must have been what? He must have been referring to me, Rabbi Yochanan. Amrli Rabbi Yochanan said, Ihadar, I'm going back to Beis Medrash. I'm not going into business with you. I'm going back to Beis Medrash. V'oki b'nafshi, and I will establish through myself, kilo yechdal evyon mikarev haaretz. So as I hear the Gemara quotes in the Pasuk in Devarim again, kilo yechdal evyon mikarev haaretz, literally, there'll always be poverty. There will always be poverty. I will say poverty is part of the human condition. There will always be poverty in this world, really, until the times of Mashiach. One of the things Mashiach will rectify is poverty. But otherwise, poverty is a fixture of the human condition. So Rabbi Yochanan says, perhaps again, it is my lot, it is my destiny to be poor, and therefore again, I'm going back to the Beis Medrash. Okay, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan hadar. Rabbi Yochanan went back to the Beis Medrash. Ilfa lo hadar. Ilfa did not go back. Ad da asilfa. So now again, the story goes on. So Rabbi Yochanan and Ilfa now gone their own ways. So Rabbi Yochanan goes back to the Beis Medrash. Ilfa's going into business, and he's doing his thing in business. So ad da asilfa. Then Ilfa came back. So however much longer later, Ilfa comes back. Malich Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan became, Malich literally means he became the king. In this case, it means he became the Rashi Shiva. He became the Rashi Shiva. And I will say, interestingly enough, look at Rashi for just a moment. Malach Rabbi Yochanan, Minuhu Rashi Shiva Alehen. They went ahead and they appointed him Rashi Shiva. And I will say, why would they use that lashon of Malach, of coronated, of anointing, of reigning for Rashi Shiva? So Rashi says actually something very interesting over here. Minuk hu mishahu Rashi Shiva, hayu megadlin oso mishalahen, uma'ashirin oso. The Rosh Yeshiva was a very well-paid position, a very well-paid position, and they would literally enrich the Rosh Hashiva from their own means. He says, So remember, this reminds a little bit of a Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol also had to be wealthy, so the Gemara discusses, what happens if the best candidate was not wealthy? So Gemara says, not a problem, but his fellow Kohanim had to make him wealthy. So Rashi points out, the reason they use the Lashon of Malach, of coronated or kinged by the Rosh Yeshiva, is because he was made wealthy. See, interestingly enough, Rabbi Yochanan did come into money. He just came into money a little bit differently. He came into money not through business, but again, he became the Rosh Yeshiva. So what happens? Ilfa comes back. Amrullah, when he came back, they said to Ilfa, I asiv mar vigaris, lo hava malich mar. Interestingly enough, they said to Ilfa, had you not left and stayed in the yeshiva, you would have been the Rosh Yeshiva and not Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, look at Rashi. So Amru lo anshe amakom, I asiv mar vigaris, im hayisa yosheva osek batora, hainu mamlichin oscha. We would have anointed you, kimo shasin Rabbi Yochanan, de ilfa havi gamar tfei me Rabbi Yochanan. Interestingly enough, because again, this apparently Ilfa was a greater Talmid Chacham than Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so had you stayed, you would have been the Rosh Yeshiva. So listen to this, and this is amazing. Asa tala nafshe ba'askaria disifinta. So Ilfa goes ahead and literally, askaria disifinta means the mast of a ship. The mast of a ship. So he goes ahead and he climbs up on the mast of a ship, and he's balancing himself on the mast of the ship. Okay, why is he up on the mast of the ship? Well, it actually points out, Talanavshe Baskaria, Klonus Eis Arus, a long pole, Takua Balevasina, that is embedded in the heart of the ship, Shemanichan Alea Machasa, that they put a sail on. So he goes up on the mast of the ship, Amar, Iika de Sharli Bamasnisa, Drebchia Braboshia. If there's someone who could ask me a question from all of the teachings of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia, who were Ilfa's Rebbeim, Velo Pashtina, and I'm not able to answer it, Leibam Asnisin. I'm not able to answer it from my teachings. Nafilna me iskaria disfinta vitavana. I will throw myself off the mast and I'll drown in the water. So we'll say, so what's happening over here? So again, essentially what you have over here is Ilfa going at balancing himself on the mast of the ship and telling anyone, I can answer any question you want. Again, from the teachings of my Rebbeim. And if I can't answer it, I'll fall off the mast. Now we'll say, I'll just point out to you, the Marsha says something amazing on this. Really profound. The Marsha says, I quote to you, he says, Talanavshe Beskar Disinta. What does it mean? Why is he going up on the mast of the ship? So the Marsha says, Api Mashakasav Msekas Erevin, Lo Me'ever Liyami, Lo Besachronim Hi Ulazer Ramazlahem, Gam Shayisi Socher, Lo Shachachti Girsasi. What Elfa was trying to demonstrate is the fun. By balancing himself on the mast of the ship represents commerce. What Ilfa was saying is, I want to show you that you can balance both. I want to show you that you can balance on the mast of the ship and yet what? Still be an outstanding Talmid Chacham. It's such a profound symbolism. Yes, I didn't become the Rosh Yeshiva because I wasn't here, because I ventured out into the world. But lest you think that because I ventured out into the world, my Torah knowledge is any less. My Torah knowledge is any less sharp, I could balance on the mast of the ship and I could still answer all of your questions. A very profound Yisod. And I will say, just as an aside, Gemara is like, this is such a mechayev. It's like an obligation, because the truth is, it's a lot easier to say you can't balance. So for those of us who have to go out into the world and work, so we have an excuse for not being Tamidei Chachamim. Bless you. Okay, so whatever, I have to work, so I can't be a Talmud Chacham. I can say Yeshiva, I can be a Talmud Chacham. When you see a Gemara like this, and you see that it doesn't actually work that way, you have to work, and you should be successful in everything you do, and you have to be a Talmud Chacham also. It is not an either or, it's an and. And that is such an exceptional obligation. So Ilf was balancing himself over here on the mast of the ship, and he says, Aswa hu saba. So someone comes, you can imagine, they should have charged the admission for this. Right? So an older man comes along, Tanale, he quoted from the following idea. Ha'omer, so he quoted the following teaching. Ha'omer tenu shekel libonai. We'll say if a person says, this is, let's say a person dies and he leaves in his last will and testament an obligation to the what's the person who in halacha they call it apotropos, is the executor of the estate? Is that the okay? He leaves to the executor of the estate. Do me a favor, give my sons each one shekel a week. One shekel a week. However, vehein ru'uyin la seis lahen sela. But the only issue is a shekel is not really enough for their support. They really require a sela. So what's the halacha? Nosnin lahem sela. We give them a sela. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because we assume that when the father said, give my son a shekel, he didn't literally mean a shekel. Aye, so why didn't he say, he wants to give them what they need for their support. So why doesn't he just say a sela? Because the father wants to encourage his kids to work. Because Rabbi Osai, if he promises them a sela, then what? Then there's no impetus to try to be self-sufficient. In order to ensure that they become self-sufficient, he lowers the amount, he calls it shekel, but he doesn't really mean to deprive them of what they need. So should they not be able to go ahead and provide for themselves, of course the estate will give them what they need. However, v'im amar, but if the father says, al titnu lahem ela shekel, but again, they will say, that's the way when he phrases it, tenu shekel lebon, I give a shekel to my son. So we understand then shekel is more of an expression of support than a literal number. But if he literally said, do not give to my sons any more than a shekel, then that already is a tzavah. Then that already is an obligation. Then it's clear that he's expressing his explicit intent that he does not want more than a shekel dispersed to his children. So in that case, in Noselam el shekel, we only give the kids a shekel. Im Amar, furthermore, if the father said, Mesu, if my children die, Yershu achirim tachtayim. So we'll say, if the father in his will goes ahead and says, creates a, I guess what we'll call, an estate progression, right? That ultimately he says that should my children die, my estate should pass to X, Y, and Z. So meaning he's already making plans for the estate even after his children. Then, bein sha'amar tnu, bein sha'amar al titnu, then what the father said, give my kids a shekel, or only give my kids a shekel, einostalam el a shekel. You only give them a shekel. Why, Rabbi, what's the logic there? Because since the father is making plans for the estate, even after his children die, indicates that what? That his intent is to preserve the estate as much as possible. Meaning when you're making plans for the next generation, ultimately, of inheritance, that shows you want to preserve the estate. Because you want to preserve the estate, therefore, when he says shekel, he really means shekel, because that will preserve the resources of the estate. So Amarle, Hamani. So this old man says to Ilfa, who's balancing on the master of the shift, ship. Who is the author? Who is the author of this particular ruling? So to which Ilfa responded, Rabbi Meiri. It is Rabbi Meir, Dara mitzvah lekayim divrei hames. Because Rabbi Meir is the one who said it is a mitzvah to fulfill the words of the deceased. So I will say, instead of just going ahead and saying that lemaisa, the father means to support his kids and we give them whatever they need for support, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that no, we really analyze what the real wishes of the deceased are and we try to act accordingly. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. We'll say another amazing Gemara. Amru alav anochem ish gamzu. Amazing. So they used to say about Nachum Ish Gamzu. Now, Rabbosai, I want to point out to you, his parents obviously didn't name him Nachum Ish Gamzu, right? Rather, again, he was Nachum. So we'll see that, interestingly enough, Ish Gamzu, we'll see that there's a well-known part. But the truth is, it's also possible that he was from a place that was named either Gamzu or Gizmo, something like that, that was actually a derivation of the place from which he came. So the Gemara Shah points this out. The Gemara just goes to the more well-known approach. So the Gemara says, Amra Allah Nachim Ish Kamzu. This Gemara is mind-blowing. Shahaya Suma Mishte Enof, he was blind in both of his eyes. Gidein Mishte Yadav, both of his hands literally were amputated. Not amputated physically, but I don't know what the word is. No, he wasn't born like that. But he didn't have hands. His hands, we'll call it amputated. His hands were amputated. Kitei mishtei raglav, both of his legs, his feet were amputated. V'chol gufa male shchin, his entire body was filled with boils. V'haya mutal b'bayis ru'ua, he lived in a rickety home. Umitaso munachin besafalin shalmayim, and the legs of his bed were in buckets of water. Kedeshlo ya'alu alav nimalim, in order that ants should not be able to go ahead and climb up on the bed, because obviously if ants climbed up on the bed and they cover Nochem Mishkamzu, he wouldn't have the ability to get them off. So by keeping the bed, by keeping the legs of the bed in water, no ants were able to get on the bed. Pam Achos, Bikshu Talmidov Lifanos Mitasel, the Acharkach Lifnos Es Akelim. So both say his students one time apparently wanted to move him to a different home. So they were going to move him out of the home, and then afterwards they were going to take his possessions out of the home. Amar Lahem, he said to them, Bonai, my sons, Panu Es Akelim, the Acharkach Panu Es Mitasi. Do me a favor, first take out my possessions, and then only afterwards take out the bed, take out my bed. Why? Shemuftach lachem, because I can promise you, kozman sheni babayis, or as long as I am in the home, ein habayis nofel. So meaning, the home is rickety, and the home is about to collapse. The only reason it's not collapsing is why? Because of my zuchus, because I'm there. If you take me out first, it's going to collapse, and there goes all of my stuff. Take the stuff out first and bring me out afterwards. So the Gemara says, Pinu es akelim, v'achar kach pinu es mitasel. So the students listen. They took out the utensils, and afterwards they took out Nochum Ishkamzu on the bed. V'nofal habayis. And amazingly enough, right after they took out Nochum, the house fell down. Amru lo talmidav, Rebbe, v'chi mi'achar shetzadik gomar ata, lama alsa l'cha kach. Well, so I said, this is amazing. So the students see this, literally, if you can imagine. So the house goes down in the very moment after they take out Nochum. So the students say to him, Rebbe, I don't understand. We don't understand. You're clearly a great man. For such a great man, how are you in this state? Well, so this is not pasha, this is not just suffering. This is beyond the pale. It's beyond the pale. So Rebbe, you're such a great tzaddik. How is it that you're in this predicament? Amar Lahem Bana, he said to him, my sons, Ani... Sorry. Ani garamti la'atzmi. I brought this upon myself. Shepam achos hayisi mehalich b'derech. Bosei, listen to this. One time I was walking on the road, lebeis chamit, my father-in-law's home, v'haya imi masui gimel chamorim, and I was traveling with three laden donkeys. Achos shal ma'achol, v'achos shal mishtem, v'achos shal minim agadim. One of the donkeys was laden with food, one with drink, and another with all types of delicacies. Ba ani echad va'amad li b'derech. So I was approached by a poor person, a pauper in the road. Va'amar li, and the poor man said to me, Rebbe, parnasani. Rebbe, he said to me, Rebbe, help me, please. Literally, support me. Give me something to eat, something to drink. Amartil, I said to him, okay, hamtin ad she'efrok min ha'chamor. Give me a second and let me remove the stuff from the donkey, and I'll go ahead and I'll give to you. Lo hispakti lifrak min ha'chamor. I didn't have time to remove the food from the donkey. Ad she'yatasa nishmaso. Until the pauper died. Until the pauper died because, again, of his compromised state. Halachti v'nafalti al panav. So says Nochum, I went and I fell on the face of the dead man. And I said, va'amarti, einai shelo chasu aleinecha, these eyes that did not go ahead and exhibit concern for your eyes, yasumu, should be blinded. Yodai shelo chasu aleinecha, these hands, i.e. Nochum says, my hands that did not exhibit sufficient concern for your hands, yisgadmu, should be amputated. Raglai shelo chasu araglecha, these feet that did not act quickly enough, did not care about your feet, yiskatu, let them be cut off. Velonis karar adaiti, and I wasn't satisfied, I still felt that I had not done proper tshuva. Velonis karar adaiti, ad sha'amarti, until I said, kol gufi yehe malishchin, my entire body should be covered by boils. So we'll say, what Nochum was saying is, Nochum realized, now obviously the Marsha points out, Nochum did not realize in the incredible severe situation in which this man was in. Had he realized how severe it was, he wouldn't have waited to simply alight that. He would have just torn open the sack that was on the donkey and given the guy something to eat. Instead, it's not that he was taking his time. It's just that he was doing things like in a masudra fashion, get off the donkey, untie the sack, do whatever needs to be done in order to go ahead and give him the food in an orderly fashion. Had I realized again, so what he was blaming blaming himself for, I will say, was essentially that I wasn't in tune enough with the needs of this individual. I wasn't sensitive enough. I wasn't observant enough. I wasn't pick up sufficiently on what his circumstances were. And that's what Nachum ultimately blames himself for. Amrulo, so a student said to him, "Oy lanu shereinucha bekach, Rebbe, how sad we are that we see you in this state." Amrulahem, he said to them, "Oy li im lo reisuni bekach, it would be woe to me if you would not have seen me in this state." In other words, what Nachum was saying was, listen, I accepted this upon myself. I did something wrong. It might not sound so terrible to all of you, but I know in my own heart what I did was wrong, and I've actively chosen to bear the fallout of that negative act in this world. So woe to me had you not seen me like this, because had you not seen me like this, it would mean that ultimately I'd have to have an accounting for this sin in the world to come. Better for me to go ahead and suffer in this world, take care of what it is that I need to take care of, and know that I'm cleansed and purged for the world to come. So why do they call him Nachum Ish Gamzu? Because everything that happened to him, he always had the same refrain, which was, Gamzu Latova, this is also good. So the Gemara tells another story about Nachum Ish Gamzu. Zimna Chada, Ba'ulish Shaduri Yisrael, Doron Lebekesar. It was at one time the Jewish people wanted to send a gift to the Caesar. Amru, they said, Man Yezel, who should take it? Yezel Nachum Ish Gamzu. Dimulumar Benisin. You know who should take it? Nachum Ish Gamzu. Because he is very well accustomed to miracles. His miracles always happen to him. They both say this obviously is before the previous story. Because Nachum Ish Gamzu is traveling on his own to the Caesar. So this is obviously before the episode that happened in which essentially he became fully handicapped. So the Gemara says, so let's send him Nachum Ish Gamzu, because again he's accustomed to miracles. Shadru biade male sifta de avanim tovos umargolios. So they sent with him a chest that was filled with beautiful stones and precious jewels. Azal basahudira balaila. Excuse me, Azubasodira. So he came to a particular inn, couldn't make the journey all at once. So he stayed at the inn. Balailo kamu hanach diura vishaklinu lisifte umalunuhu afra. So what happens? That night, apparently the people in the inn realized that he was carrying treasure. So they broke into his box, they took out the jewels, and they filled the box with dirt. Okay? So kimata hasam. When Nachum gets to the Caesar, so what happens? Sharinhu lisifta chazanu demale afra. So there he's here. So now Nachum is here to present a gift to the Caesar on behalf of the Jewish community. They open up the box, and sure enough, what's there? Dirt. So you can imagine ba'a malka lemikdalinu lekulu. The king was ready to kill the entire Jewish people because he thought the Jewish people were mocking him. He thought that this gift was an absolute affront to him. So what happened? Amar kamachaychi beYehudai, the Jews are making fun of me. Asa Eliyahu, so Amar gamz l'tova. So Nachum muttered to himself, not muttered. He said to himself, gamz l'tova. This somehow will also be good. I want to point out, you know, there's a great misunderstanding when it comes to gamzu l'tova, that people think, oh, this is also for good. People think that that's kind of like what you say when life stinks. There's no real possible good that could come out of it, but you want to sound frum. You know, so, gamzu l'tova, right? I'm down on my luck. Life is terrible. But Shrach is going to take care of me. That's not what gamzu l'tova is. Gamzu l'tova is not like a statement of desperation that you say when you have no other options, but you want to sound frum. Gamzu l'tova is a profound religious mindset where a person realizes that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for good. Good doesn't mean that I like it. Good doesn't mean that it's the way I wanted it to be. Good doesn't mean that I'm happy with this particular outcome, but in the great global universal sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ultimate plan is for good, and therefore somehow this event fits in for good as well. I might not see it, I might not understand it, I might not appreciate it, but I nevertheless believe it. So Nachum is standing there, the Caesar is now ready to, what exactly is Nachum supposed to do? The chest was filled with dirt, he was robbed. Gamzu l'tova. So what happens? Asu Eliyahu. It's amazing. Eliyahu Hanavi comes, Idmi leikechad minayu, disguised as a Roman general. A Roman general, Amar Lei, he says to the Caesar, Dilma ha'afra me'afra de'avram avuhun. Maybe this is Abrahamitic dust, Abrahamitic dirt, the dirt of Avram Avinu. Why? Dichi hava shadi afra havu saifi. Because when Avram Avinu would throw dirt, the dirt would turn into swords. Gili, when he would throw straw, havu gairi, it would turn into arrows. Dichsiv, because the pasuk says, yitein ka'afar harbo, kekash nidaf kashto. Literally, he will make, like the dirt his sword, or the sword, like the dirt his swords, and the straw will become like the bent bow. So the Gemara says, Havia chada medinas. So again, Eliyahu HaNavi tries to save the day by saying it's special dirt. Special dirt. Havia chada medinta delamatzi lemichbisha. So there was one particular city that the Caesar was unable to conquer. Bat kumine. So they tried out this special Abrahamitic dirt. And amazing enough, they threw it at the city. It turned into swords. It turned into arrows. The whole thing. Vikav shuhu. And they captured the city. So they brought Nachum. They brought Nachum along for this particular battle. Ailu lebeginaze. So they took Nachum into the treasure house. The treasure house of this captured city. Umaluhu lesifte avanim tovos umargolios. And they filled Nachum's chest with gold, silver, precious stones, jewels, and sent him home. Send him home with great honor. Vishadruha bikra rabo. Kiasu beso bahudiura. So we'll say, listen to this. Now Nachum stays at the same inn, coming back. So he stays at the same inn. You could imagine the people are probably a little bit surprised to see him. They thought that was going to be the end of Nachum Ish Gamzu. So they see him and they say to him and they see again he's come back with such wealth. Amrulay my Isis Bahadach the Avdi Lach Yakra Kulehai. Tell us Nachum. What did you give to the Caesar that they went ahead and they're treating you with all this honor? I mean, they know they replaced the jewels with the dirt. So tell us, what did you bring? Amar lehu, ma'id shakli mihacha at mila hasam. So Nachum says, listen, I don't know what to tell you. Whatever I took from here is what I gave ultimately to the Caesar, and this resulted in all this incredible covet for me. So what did they do? Sasri lidirayu. So the innkeepers demolished the house. Ve'at minhu lebe malka, and they brought all of the dirt to the king. Amrulay, hai afra da isi hacha medidanhu. And they said to the Caesar, wonderful news. You know that guy Nachum brought you the chest of dirt? That dirt was actually from our house. We've brought you truckloads of it. So bat kuha velo ashkechuha. So we'll say, as you can imagine, they tested the dirt and it was not Abrahamitic dirt. The katlinhu lahanach diurai. And they executed these particular innkeepers. Okay. Ezehu dever. So it's like going back to the Mishnah for just a moment. The Mishnah said, what is the halachic definition of pestilence? So the Mishnah said that if you have a city that has 500 able-bodied men, so the death of three people on three consecutive days, meaning one person per day on three consecutive days, ultimately is a sign of pestilence, of dever. Tanu Rabbanan, ira motziyeh chamish mi'osve alef ragli. If you have a city that has 1,500 people, kigon kfar ako, that's 1,500 able-bodied men, like kfar ako, v'yotzeh emena tisha mesem shloshiyam. I mean, you have nine people die in 3 days, meaning three people a day. So ze'achar ze'ach, consecutive days, Hari is a dever. That is dever. Biyom echad. However, again, if they all die on one day, o bedalad yom, or they die over 4 days, ain't a dever. So that's not pestilence. There might be something else. That's not pestilence. So similarly, again, viyar motziyah chamish mos ragli kagon kfar amiko. If you have a city that has 500 able-bodied men, like kfar, like the village of Amiko, viyatzei men of shlosh meisim gimel yom, and three people die over the course of 3 days, zeachar zeh, one after the other, hare is a dever. And I will say again, that is a sign ultimately of pestilence. Biyom echad, but if they die on one day, over arba yom, or over 4 days, ain't a dever, that is not pestilence. Dirokros, or Dirokros, ir hamotziyah chamesh mios ragli. So Dirokros is a city that had 500 able-bodied men. V'yotzi men shlosha meisim yom echad, and three people died in one day. Gazer of Nachabar of Chista ta'anisa, and Nachabar Yitzchak declared a fast day. Now, Bosa is interesting, because we just got finished saying it's only considered to be pestilence if what? If they die on three consecutive days. Here, apparently, three of them died on one day, and yet Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista declared a fast day. I'm Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says, in accordance with whose opinion am I operating? Could Rabbi Meir, like Rabbi Meir, because what is Rabbi Meir? So both of this is very interesting. The Amar Richek Nigichosav Chayiv, Kirev Nigichosav Kosh. Can I also say it's very interesting? Halacha L'maisa, we know when we get to Baba Kama, we'll deal with a shor hamuad. So shor hamuad is an ox that is literally warned to gore. So how does an ox, and I will say that has ramifications, let's say, for payment. You know, when an ox, let's say, gores the first time, so according to, well, in certain circumstances, you only pay chatzi nezek, you only pay half damages, but once it becomes a muad, you have to pay full damages. So the halacha is that a shor, an ox, becomes a muad, becomes warned, we'll call it warned, to do damage after it gores three times. So normally the halacha, so one opinion says it has to gore three times on three different occasions, three different days. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, he says, listen, if three times, if a shor gores three times, and those times, each time is separated from the other, and yet it still works to make the shor a muad, all the more so what? That if the shor gores three times in one day, then certainly what? It's a muad as well. So Rabbi Meir is of this opinion that if spacing creates a reality, all the more so when things happen consecutively, there's a reality. Therefore, Rabbi Meir would say in this case that even if three people didn't die on three consecutive days, but three people died on the same day, that's also the sign of a plague. And therefore, Rabbi Nachman bar Rav Chista, declared a fast day. Amar le Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Lekum mar. This is very interesting. So what happened? Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista, listen to this Gemara, said to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, come live by us. I will say, why is Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Rav Chista, trying to get Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak to come live with them? So look at Rashi. Leiko mar hacha, the Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Havi Yosef ben Gavri, the lo chashivi kolihai, because we'll say Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak was living in a place, was part of a community, was living in a place that they weren't such great people. They were good people, but the truth is, it was a mediocre, average place. The Ka'amrli Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista lekom mar mehasam velesiv gaboy, and therefore Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista says to Rav Nachman, listen, you're living here in a place of mediocrity, and the truth is, again, you're going to be limited in what you could accomplish. Come live with us. Come live in our city. We have much greater people there and much greater resources, and you could fully actualize. You could really accomplish something for yourself. So Amrle, listen to this. He said to him, Amrle Tanina, we learned, Rabbi Yossi said, Lo mekomo shel adam mechabdo. Rabbi Yossi, it is not the place in which a person lives that gives him honor. Ela adam mechabed es mekomo. Oh, it's such a profound yisod. It's not the place that makes the person. It's the person that makes the place. So what he was saying is, listen, you're right. It could be that technically speaking, your place is greater. It could be your city is greater. But then it's my job to make my city greater. That's my avoda. Shekeimatzinu b'har Sinai, because we find b'har Sinai, shekozman shashchina shiruya alav. As long as the Shechina was sitting on the mountain, was dwelling on the mountain, Amrit Torah said, "Gamatzom ha'bakar al-yiru amahu al-mul." Gamatzom ha'bakar al-yiru el-mul ha'har ha'hu. The Torah says, "The sheep and the cattle shall not graze by the mountain." Meaning, when the Shechina was there, the mountain was kadosh. Nistalku Shechina, meaning when the Shechina left the mountain. Amr Torah, the Torah said, "Bimshoch hayovel hema ya'alu bahar." When the shofar sounds, the people could ascend the mountain. I mean, when the Ribono Shel Olam leaves, they go up on the mountain. So what do you see from there? There's no intrinsic kedusha to Har Sinai. Har Sinai was only kadosh because the Shechina chose to dwell on it. So too, again, a place is as great as the people who live there want to make it. So at the end of the day, this is amazing. So Rav Nachman bar, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says, Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista, your city may be greater, your people may be greater, but my goal is not to come to move to you. My goal is to try to make my place greater. So too we see by the Olmoit, by the Mishkan, Sheva Midbar, that was in the desert. Shekozman shu natui, as long as the Mishkan stood, Amra Torah, or as long as the camp was in place, the Torah said, V'yishalchu min ha'machana kol tzarua. It also is very interesting. So when the camp was set up, camp was in formation, Mishkan was standing. So the Torah says anyone who had saras had to be outside of the camp. Huglulu ha'parochas, but once the curtains were rolled up, meaning the Mishkan was disassembled, ready to move. Hutru zavim mitzorim likanes sham. So people, zavim and mitzorim are permitted to come into the camp. Meaning, what does that mean? Very interesting enough. So the Torah says that the tzarua, the person that saras, the zav, anyone whose stomach can't come into the camp. The definition of the camp was what's set up, meaning interest. As soon as they break camp and the camp begins to move, so technically speaking, there you have that area that was the camp. And yet what? The people who are tamei are permitted to enter that area. Why do you see that? What do you see from there? That it's not the camp that has intrinsic kedusha. It's the people who have. It's the people who make the kedusha of the camp. So if the people move, the kedusha of the camp is no longer in that place. So the Gemara says, "Amar le ihachi." Says if that's the case, so interesting. So now remember, Nachman Bar Yitzchak has very politely declined the offer of Rav Nachman Bar Avchista to come and resettle in his town, despite the fact that perhaps his town was more prominent, his town was more chashiv, and maybe even again Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak would have greater opportunities in that new town, because he felt, again, it's not the town that makes the person, but it's the person who makes the town. I have to try harder to make this place a makom kedusha. See, he says, Ihaki, if that's the case, nekom ana legabi mars. It's interesting. So Nachman Bar Chisda said, you know, there's actually a very good argument, so maybe I should come to live with you. So now this is says reversed. So Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chisda says, listen to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, if you're not going to come to us, so I'll come live with you. So listen cool. To this. Amar Lei, Mutav Yehe Mana Ben Pras, Eitzel Mana Ben Mana, Va'al Yavo Mana Ben Mana, Eitzel Mana Ben Pras. Literally, the mana, but we'll say mana is an amount, is a currency amount. So pras is half of that amount. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, better for a mana, the son of a pras, to come to a mana, the son of a mana, than the mana of a son of a mana to come to the mana of the son of a pras. And I'll say, sorry, I guess it works better in the Hebrew. But, you know, what's the pshat? Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, I am a mana, the son of a pras. Meaning, if you'll notice again, it's Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. His father did not have the appellation Rav. His father did not have smicha. So his father was not a great Talmud Chacham. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chisda was not only a great man himself, but was also the son of a great man. So Nachman Bar Yitzchak says to Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chisda, the truth is, you should not come to me. You should not come to me, because at the end of the day, the truth is, you have combined, your greatness is greater than mine, because you not only have your personal greatness, but what? You also have your father's greatness as well. So therefore, again, you don't come to visit me, I'll come to visit you. I'm not moving, I'm staying put where I am, but Lamaisa, again, I will come to visit you. Okay, so the Gemara says the following. Besura havas dabarta. So we'll say, in the city of Sura, there was dabarta, Rashi says, dever. There was an outbreak of pestilence. This is in the city of Sura. However, b'shvivusei derav, lo hava dabarta. So interestingly enough, again, as much Rav lived in Sura, but interestingly enough, the neighborhood of Rav was spared from the pestilence. There was no pestilence in Rav's neighborhood. Savru minei mishum zechusei derav dinafishei. So we'll say what happened. So the townspeople assumed that the reason why Rav's neighborhood was not affected by pestilence was because of Rav's zechus. That's what they assumed. Ischazi leibacham. We'll say, listen to this. So they went ahead, and the townspeople apparently all had the same dream. It's actually quite amazing. So Rashi says, Ischazi leibacham. It's the second wide line in Rashi. Lahanach inshi disavri mushum zechus derafi. So the people who thought that it was Rav's zechus that spared the neighborhood from the pestilence, they had a dream. And in the dream they saw, Rav Dinefushe Zuchuse Tuva, Ha Milsa Zutra Le L'Rav. So they saw in the dream that for Rav, Rav's merit is so great that the avoidance of pestilence in his neighborhood is like a nothing. That's obvious. That Rav's greatness far eclipses a miracle of such small magnitude. So why was the neighborhood of Rav spared the pestilence? Elam Yishon, listen to this. Dahu Gavra Dishayil Mara Uzevila Likvura. Because again, there was a particular man that used to always lend out his hoe and his shovel, his digging instruments, to go ahead and for people who are digging graves. So there's someone who was always involved in Chesed Shel Emes, who was always making sure that if there was a grave that needed to be dug, that he would always lend out the tools necessary to do so. So in that Zuchus, and apparently he lived in the neighborhood of Rav, in that Zuchus, the neighborhood of Rav was spared from the ravages of the pestilence. Amazing. Jose, just also, you've seen again we've seen a number of episodes in this past Gemara, just the power of Chesed. It's these small acts that appear that would seem to be so small and insignificant, but yet again so incredibly powerful. Bidrukarta havu delecto. So we'll say in the city of Drukarta, there was a fire that broke out. A fire that broke out in the city. Ubishvivuse dravhuna lo havu delecto. And what happened? And in the city and in the neighborhood of Ravhuna, the fire did not destroy anything. Okay. Savarmine bizhuse dravhuna dinafish. So they assumed that it was the zhuchus of Ravhuna that ultimately prevented the fire from ravaging the neighborhood. Ischazi lehu bechilma. They saw in a dream. Hai zutro leil Ravhuna. The truth is, Ravhuna's zuchus is so great that the avoidance of a fire is like a nothing. So why was the fire avoided in his neighborhood? Rabbi said, listen to this. Ela mishum hahi isisa, because there was a particular woman that lived in his neighborhood. De mechamamta tenura o mishayli lishvivusei. There was a particular woman who used to literally heat up her oven and allow the neighbors to use it. Rashi says over here, "Mishayla lishvivusa u'mashilas lishchenusei la'achar she'sikasu mishala l'fichach nimdedes haschar ba b'midas." We'll say amazing. So what happened? There was a woman who used to go ahead and allow the poor of her neighborhood to use her oven. So in the merit of that zichus, the neighborhood was saved from the fire. Now, Rashi points out over here, it's a little bit of a nida kineged nida, like a quid pro quo. She shared her fire with the neighborhood, and therefore, again, the neighborhood was spared the ravages of the fire. Again, remember, we know nothing about this woman. We know nothing about her general state of piety. What do we know? We know that she cared about the other. That's what we know. She cared about the other. She shared her oven with everyone else. That was her zichus. Okay? So the Gemara goes weiter. Amalei the Rav Yehuda, so they said to Rav Yehuda, Asu Kamtze. The Rav Yehuda, the Kamtze are coming. Rashi says, Kamtze, Arbe Shemechalas HaTvua. Kamtze also has a particular type of locust that destroys the grain. So what happened? Gazer Ta'anisa. So they went ahead and they said to Rav Huna, the Kamtze is coming, and he declared a fast day. Amalei, they said to him, Lo Kamafzadon. So they said to Rav Yehuda, but we haven't lost anything left yet. Rashi lo kamafsada lo ba'ina lemigzar ta'anisa. The truth is, it hasn't negatively affected the grain yet. So they saw a couple, I guess, of these kamsi locusts. But again, it hasn't adversely affected the grain yet. Amar lahu, he said to them, Amar lahem zavda aisi ba'adaya. So it's very interesting. So he said to them, tell me, did they bring their own lunch? Did they bring their own lunch, the locusts? Meaning the locusts are coming. And if the locusts are coming, it means they're going to devour the grain. We don't have to, assuming the locusts didn't pack a lunch, they're going to be devouring the grain. And we need not wait until the actual damage occurs before we begin fasting in order to avoid this calamity. Amri Rav Huda, they said to Rav Huna, Ika musna b'chaziri. Also, it's very interesting. They said to Rav Huna, there was a plague that broke out among the chazir, among the pigs. There was a pig disease that broke out. Gazer ta'anisa. So what happened? Rav Yehuda declared a fast day because of it. Nema kasav Rav Yehuda makam mushlechas mimin echad mushlechas mikol aminim. Was it because that Rav Yehuda held that once one species has a plague, that plague could easily spread among other species? To which the Gemara says, Lo, shiny chaziri, the damyon me'ayhu lebnei inshi. He says, interestingly enough, because the digestive systems of pigs are similar to the digestive system of humans. And because of that, there was a concern that humans may be susceptible to pig diseases. So because of that, again, when this plague impacted the pigs, so therefore, again, they declared a fast day for the human beings. Amalei the Shmuel. They said to Shmuel, Ika musna bechozoi. There is a deadly plague. There was a deadly plague in Bechozai. Bechozai was a place. And I will say again, Bechozai was a good distance from where Shmuel was. Look at Rashi. Bechozai, Rashi says, Makom b'malchus bavel. So Bechozai was a distant city. There's a deadly plague that broke out in Bechozai. Gazer ta'anisa, Shmuel declared a fast day. Amar lei, said to Shmuel, Ha merchok. But 1 second, Bechozai is far away from here. Amar lei, Amar leka ma'abra. So he said to them, interestingly enough, there is no river crossing between us and Bechozai. In other words, there is no body of water that separates us in Bechozoi. Because of that, it is easy for the plague to spread to us as well. Therefore, we should fast. So the Gemara says, excuse me, Leka ma'abra hacha de pasachle. There is no body of water, there's no river crossing that separates us. Amri Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Ika musna ba'aradi Yisrael. There is a plague. There's a plague that has broken out in Eretz Yisrael. Gazar ta'anisa. So what happened? Rav Nachman declared a fast. I'm about to say, now, again, Rav Nachman is not in Eretz Yisrael. He's in Bavel. But they said a plague broke out in Eretz Yisrael. They went ahead and they declared a fast day. Amar, he said, im gevira loke, shivcha lo kol shekein. If the matron is stricken with disease, does the maidservant not have to be fearful? Meaning, if Eretz Yisrael is stricken with disease, so again, it's possible that Bava will be as well. So the Gemara says, Taima di gevira v'shivcha. So the reason we have to be concerned is because Eretz Yisrael is on a higher level than Bavel, and if Eretz Yisrael is stricken by disease, so it's possible that Bava will be as well. Ha shivcha shivcha, but two maidservants, for example, meaning, but again, two cities of similar stand. Let's say you have two cities in Bavel. Lo, we would not be concerned for the possibility that disease would spread from one to the other. Yet we saw before that when a deadly plague broke out in Bechozoi, Shmuel, who was a good distance from Bechozoi, gazer ta'anisa, to which the Gemara says, shiny hasam. No, that case is different. Why? Because they were caravans that would travel between Shmuel's city and Bechozoi. Because there were direct lines of transportation between the two cities, even though what? They were at a good distance, there was a real possibility that the disease, the plague, would spread, and therefore they declared a fast day. So the Gemara goes weiter. If there was a body of water dividing them, apparently Shmuel felt you would not have to declare a fast day in that situation. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Abba Umna, I will say this is amazing. Abba Umna, I will say in this case, literally means either, literally translation is the surgeon. Now he was a bloodletter. So Abba, they called him Abba the surgeon. Abba the doctor, he was a bloodletter. Abba Umana, Abba the blood, the surgeon. Listen to this. Havi asili shama mi masifta dirakia kol yoma. He would receive greetings from the heavenly yeshiva each and every day. And I'll say, now what is that? And you look at Rashi. Rashi says, shama mi rakia bas kol omeres lo shalom alecha. There would be a heavenly voice that would call out every single day, shalom alecha Abba Umana. Can you imagine that? Imagine that. Bas kol every single day. So what happened? So Ula Abaye called Ma'al Yom HaDeShabsa. Abaye got a bas kol, right? A heavenly shout out. So he got the heavenly shout out on Erev Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos. Every Erev Shabbos, so bas kol would come out, shalom alecha Abaye. L'Rava called Ma'al Yom HaDeKippuri. And Rava would get the heavenly shalom aleichem every erev Yom Kippur. Hava kachalsha daite de Abaye mishum de abar Abba Umanam. So Abaye was upset, not upset, I will say, but almost like jealous. He wanted to know, why is Abba Umana getting shalom aleichem every single day from Shamayim, and I only get it on erev Shabbos? Meaning, I will say, when he was saying, he wanted to know, what merit does Abba Umana have that I don't have? Amulei, lo matzis leme avid ku'uvdei. They said to Abaye, listen, you're just not Abba Umana. Abba Umana is a very pious individual. And the truth is, you can't be as pious as him. Why not? Umay hava uvdei. So what was so special about Abba Umana? Listen to this. What did he do? The Abba Umana, remember, he's a bloodletter. Dichi hava avid milsa, hava machis gavri lechud, binoshi lechud. Rabbi Osai, again, when he was bloodletting, he made sure to keep men and women separate during bloodletting. And Rabbi Osai, now what's the ma'ila of that? Remember, bloodletting does require sometimes uncovering certain parts of the body. So he understood that, again, if this was going to happen in mixed company, it could lead to certain inappropriate things. So the first thing was that he instituted a certain level of tznius within his practice. There was a men's area for bloodletting and a women's area for bloodletting. So he kept them separate. That's number one. V'isle levusha de'isbe karna. And he had a special garment. Like, the way it's described, it's almost like a coat, it's like a smock. A gown. That's the right word. He had like a gown. Now this gown, de'isbe karna, Rabosai karna, refers to the suction tube from which they would draw out the blood. So the gown itself had a suction tube attached to it. De'havis bezia ki kusli kusilta, and it had a slit that was just large enough for the needle. So it had a suction tube attached to it and a slit that allowed for the needle to go in. Kihavis asile isisa havamabishla. When a woman would come to him for bloodletting, he would have her put on this gown. Kihichi delonistakilba. In order, suppose that the gown really just exposed enough of the area to allow the bloodletting to occur. Or in other words, he wanted to make sure that he wouldn't need to see any more of an uncovered part of a woman than was necessary for him to go ahead and do his work. See, he maintained a level of tznius, again, not just for others, but for himself as well. Let's listen to this. Suppose the first part is he maintained an incredible level of tznius in his practice. The next thing was v'isle duchta ditzina, and he had, I will say, he did not take payment himself. Instead, what he had was when you left the area where the bloodletting occurred, he had another private area, d'shadi bepshite, where people would go ahead and put in coins. They would deposit payment on their way out. The less lay low mixav. So we'll say what happened. And this way again, the collection jar was in a more private area. Everybody walked through it. If you had money to pay, you put it in. And if you didn't have money to pay, you didn't pay. But this way again, you were not made to feel like less of a person. You're not embarrassed because you couldn't pay. When a young Talmud Chacham would come to for his medical services, agra mine lo shakil, he would not take any money from yeshiva students. He would not take any money from young Talmidei Chachamim. Ubaser dekai, listen to this, and not only that, but after Abba Umana did the bloodletting, Yohev le pshite, he would go ahead, not only would he not accept money from young Talmidei Chacham, but what? He would give them money. He would give them money because he would say to them, Va'amrle, zil bore nafshach, go and make yourself healthy. Rashi's Tavri Atzmach. Rabbi said, why? Because after bloodletting, remember we saw this in earlier Gemara, after bloodletting, there were certain foods that were required after bloodletting. You know, like, you know, who cares about apple juice? Who wants apple juice, right? But rather, again, remember, Gemara, we saw this in Erev, we saw in Pesachim, that what are you supposed to eat after you drink and after you bloodlet? Fatty meat and rich red wine. So therefore, again, the Talmidei Chachamim would not have money for these things. Abba Umana would not only not accept payment for them, but what? But he would actually give them money in order that they could purchase what was necessary to make sure that they were healthy. So we'll stop over here for today. But again, this is what the Gemara is saying, that Lemaisa, this is why Abba Umana was getting Shalom Aleichem each and every day. Because he tried to maintain a level of tznius in his practice, and because, again, he was careful with the covet of people who could not pay, and because he took care of the young Talmidei Chachamim. We'll pick up over here tomorrow morning. We are starting 5:45 again. 5:45 again.